October 2nd, 2021. At an Insight Santa Cruz day-long online retreat today. It's good to do these things from time to time. Practice all day. Good to do that from time to time. Actually, it's good to do that all the time. There's a Japanese carpentry woodworking book that we have at on a Japanese joinery, and it opens with verses. So a Japanese woodworking book, it's not just a technical manual, but it's poetry as well. So it opens at the beginning with verses. A word of encouragement, curiosity. A word of caution, sharp. A word to the wise, learn how to learn. So I wanted to talk about learn how to learn, how important that quality is. Learning how to learn, because we don't really learn by getting things explained to us in the proper way, the right way. We actually really learn. We really internalize things when we do something, when we engage in something, and then we make mistakes. And there's a requisite level of frustration. We go through the frustration. We develop patience. We try again and again and again. And that's how we learn something. That's how we learn a skill. It also mentions in the introduction to this book that the apprenticeship for becoming a Japanese carpenter is 14 years. So yesterday, I think it was Jill mentioning that there was this guy trying to learn how to make the dugout canoe. So this old style of making canoes, you got the log, you've got your adz, and you make a dugout canoe or any type of dugout carving. In Thailand, they use these dugout log bowls for robe washing. You got the hardwood, like a hardwood log, and then it's just somebody takes an adz and they just chip away at it until it's a bowl. They sand it, make it smooth, make it suitable for doing the robe washing, robe dyeing, where you take the robe and you just beat it into this bowl with some hot water, some robe washing water, some robe dye. In Thailand, you use the heartwood of the jackfruit tree dye. Here, if we're doing natural dyeing, it might be manzanita or madrone dye that you wash your robe in. And mentioning just kind of being an apprentice, making dugout canoes, and as a native guy, making it, the elder, and then the Westerner, and he's kind of like, how do you do this one part? The guy just kind of looks over and just keeps working. So wanting an explanation, but there's just no substitute for doing. It's like, well, just do it. Just figure it out. So that's the best way to learn, is just figuring it out, just doing it, and figuring it out from scratch, actually. That's the best way. And then you really learn it, and it takes longer, but you really internalize it, you really learn it, you really have to get interested in it. You can have a teacher or a guide kind of pointing things out to you, but they're not going to be able to hold your hand the whole way. At a certain point, we've got to just figure it out. So practices like that as well, of meditation, we don't get peaceful. We're not experiencing samadhi like we think we should. It's like, well, just keep doing it. Nobody can really explain it. I mean, we have the teachings, we have the Dhamma books, we've listened to a lot of talks, but we just have to do it. So you can learn something like sharpening, say like knife sharpening. You can watch a tutorial video. You can watch somebody sharpening knives who's really good at it. We've got a knife sharpening tutorial DVD. The guy is a master knife sharpener, and he's made thousands of knives from scratch and sharpened 50,000 knives or something. And sharp enough to shave with, like a knife, you can just like, after he sharpens it, you can just shave with it. And you can see that he's adept at it. Well, you just do this and this and this, and it's really sharp, but you try it and it doesn't get sharp. Well, I did what he said, but the knife didn't get sharp. So at that point, we have two options. We can either give up and just say, oh, well, knife sharpening isn't for me. Or we can persevere and we can say, okay, I'm going to do whatever it takes to learn how to sharpen a knife. And the issue with that takes time. It takes time and dedication. And it's not so much about talent. Talent actually, in terms of really mastering a skill, talent plays into it very little, actually. We could have some natural talent at knife sharpening, but then if somebody doesn't have natural talent at us, they're going to get better if they have the perseverance. In fact, having that natural talent might cause us to get, a little bit conceited about it, a little bit puffed up, and then we get lazy. We don't really put the effort in that we should be. So learning involves this kind of frustration. So it's the same with practice or with anything we do, that how to not get angry, how to not follow craving, how to actually do that. And we really, at a certain point, we can't be taken by the hand. We just have to figure it out. Because only we know what's fully going on for ourselves. Yeah. So these are the four Adipadas that the Buddha talks about. Chanda, Virya, Chitta, Vimamsa. Chanda, desire, you have to want to do something. Virya, you have to put forth the requisite effort, persevere. Chitta is like putting your heart into it, focusing on it, not getting distracted. Vimamsa is reviewing. Did it get sharp or not? If it didn't get sharp, then why not? And then starting over again. Chanda, and okay, well, I'm going to try again. Virya, Chitta, Vimamsa. So we have to want to develop ourselves. We have to want to we have to develop that interest. So So that interest is so important. Part of us might feel that, well, I don't want to fail or I don't want to look bad. Sometimes that's why we don't volunteer for things. We don't want to volunteer to be the work monk because I'm going to make mistakes. People aren't going to be happy with my decisions. And yes, that's true. And we are going to make mistakes. If we don't want to ever make mistakes, we're not really going to learn. Yeah. Sometimes people come into the practice and really sincere, really intent, and will say things like, I want to do it right. I want to follow the instructions exactly. I don't want to fail. And the first thing I say is, you will fail. That's a given, so get over that. You will definitely fail. So it's good to fail. Once we fail, then we can begin. Then we can really learn. It's like, okay, I fell down. Now I know what that's like. It's kind of like a fighter. It's like somebody might have a lot of talent or be a natural athlete in fighting or kickboxing. But the thing that happens that shows whether they can really be a fighter or not is the first time they get hit. So I think there's some statistic I heard about 40 or 50% of people who go into fighting, the first time they get hit, they quit. So that's the failure, the first time we fail. Are we gonna quit, or is that, okay, now I know what that's like. I know what it's like to get hit. It's not pleasant, and it hurts, and it's bad. But this is what I'm signing up for. And this is what it is. Now I don't have any illusions about it. And then when we do persevere at something, then it's really worth it. So it's the same with any of the contemplations that the Buddha talked about. If we want to do metta practice, for example, or body contemplation, mindfulness of the body, or just mindfulness practice itself. So that takes perseverance. If we want to learn a language, it takes those idipadas, it takes perseverance. Reminiscing yesterday a little bit, reminiscing about learning Thai and sometimes I'll speak Thai with people, and I only lived in Thailand for 6.5 years, which isn't really a hugely long time in terms of like trying to become fluent in Thai language. 8, 9, 10 years is better, I think, for becoming fully fluent, and I don't consider myself fully fluent in Thai, but usually when I speak Thai with people, the response is, oh, you speak very clearly. And then people ask, like, oh, how did you learn Thai? And I was extremely intent on learning Thai before I ever went to Thailand. So, well, I asked Ajahn Jayasaro, like, how should I learn Thai? How should I start? He told me how I should start. I did that. I tried really hard. I practiced the tones. I memorized the alphabet. Went to Thailand, was reciting the alphabet during heading out on Tung Bon alms round, the longest alms round at Nanachat. You walk out, do this long walk out, and it's reciting all the consonants and vowels, the 42 consonants and 36 vowels, 5 tones, combining them in different ways, just practicing them. By the end of my year in Thailand, my third Vasa year, when I had to come back to Ubayagiri, I still couldn't speak Thai, and I was getting really starting to lose heart, thinking, well, maybe I don't have the kama, or I don't have the natural talent, so I wanted to give up. But then there was the opportunity to go back to Thailand for longer, so I set it down for a while, but then I picked it up again and went back for my sixth Vasa. And then spent 4 years in Thailand. And I was, that sixth Vasa, I spent the Vasa at Phujamgom. I wasn't looking after the place at the time. There was a monk named Tan Gunawudo, who was temporarily the senior monk there. And so I spent my sixth Vasa there. And studying 1 or 2 hours a day of Thai, had a grammar book. I was studying the grammar, making flashcards, really trying hard, and still just couldn't, my comprehension wasn't good. I couldn't understand people speaking Thai. I couldn't really get my mind around it. And I just, again, I started thinking, yeah, maybe it's just not going to happen. Maybe I just can't speak Thai. But I kept plugging away at it and kept thinking about it, trying to put the advice of Master Xuan Hua into effect, where he said, if you really want to learn something, you have to be thinking about it on the pillow and on the pillow and on the pot. And so I was thinking about Thai all the time and trying to translate the little Dhamma phrases into Thai, trying to catch little phrases of teachings of Ajahn's, giving talks in Thai. Still just that comprehension wasn't happening. I was still diligently practicing the reading and writing. I could do the sounds, but I couldn't really, couldn't figure out like what were people actually saying, like getting a feel for it. And certainly was speaking, but not speaking well. And it was very broken, then that trying to pay attention more and more, and then eventually, after being back in Thailand for maybe 6 months, and I was really starting to think, yeah, I don't know about this, because at that point I'd been studying it for years, and I thought, well, they said, you know, I should have learned it by now, and I'm obviously slower than other people. And then I remember one night I had a dream in Thai, and then I just started speaking it, and then I set all the books down, and then it was like the learning was talking to people in Thai, asking them about different words, asking them different vocabulary words, and slowly going from there. And it started to get much better at that point. So there was a certain threshold that needed to be reached. So it's kind of like knife sharpening. You keep doing it and you want to give up and you persevere, and it takes way longer than you think it's going to take or you want it to take. And then one day your knife gets so sharp you can shave with it. You feel this sense of accomplishment. Or you're memorizing the Padimokkha, so the bhikkhus will, a lot of bhikkhus will memorize the Padimokkha, the 227 rules of training. It's about 13,000 words in Pali, and it's a rapid fire chant. It takes about 45 minutes, chanted quickly. And it's the same thing, it's just finding how to do it. And you can kind of get tips and tricks from people, but really to do it, you have to actually find your own way to memorize that and to be able to recite it. I think one monk actually, to try to recite it faster, he was actually reciting it while holding a pen in his mouth so he could learn how to recite it faster and maybe set the record for the fastest Padimokkha. Some monks will write it out and like seeing it written out. So everybody's different. Some monks will listen. They'll find a Padimokkha that sounds good to them and they'll listen to it over and over and over again. So it's like anything we want to do, if more and more for myself, if somebody says like, well, how do I do this? I might have a couple pointers, but then I'll just be like, well, figure it out. And that's not to dismiss somebody or say like, well, forget about it or don't do it. that means do it, but do it, figure it out, learn it, master it. Because we can only do that when we get our nose to the grindstone and just do it, just figure it out. And if we're really considering it, we're really putting our heart into all these activities, then there's really no limit. There's really no limit to what we can achieve, really no limit to what we can do. This is the Pali word, manusa, the Pali word for human. And manusa, there's one translation that a Thai Ajahn, Pra Ajahn Paiuto, describes the word manusa, which is translated as human being. He says that manusa actually means one who has no limits, one who can achieve without limits. So, and he talks about that in terms of humans being able to figure out through their perseverance things like how to build skyscrapers and how to go to space, how to build rockets, and just through that perseverance of every little step, just figuring it out. You know, how could people have figured out that they needed helium to cool the rockets so they don't explode when they're taking off? You know, how could people actually figure that out? So that's manusa. But we don't need to build rockets here in the monastery. We can learn things like sharpening and speaking Thai and metta practice and body contemplation. We can learn things like that, and it takes the interest, the perseverance. So learn how to learn. So leave that for reflection this evening.